lawyer, but I am not your lawyer. There is no legal advice provided on this show, so don't rely on it or take any action based on it. And actually, today's topic, there's not really anything you could do with anything anyway, so it's not that important today. Today is a big day, as I have one email to respond to after 2 months. So again, if you have something you're curious about, email me at commonlaw7b@gmail.com. That's commonlaw7b@gmail.com. Today's topic, since we only have one email, and we do have a text in, a text question from somebody from one of our past lectures, but after I address those, today we're going to be talking about constitutional law, which means we'll be talking about the Constitution, which means you have to talk about constitutional law. Most people don't do that. They just tell you what they think about a law without really talking about constitutional law. And today, what we hope to do is to give you some sort of a framework to discuss a law that you think may or may not be constitutional, and leaving out all the nice little buzzwords and catchphrases that you hear on your various talking head programs. And so that's today's subject. Again, I am still online looking at my email, so if you want to send me a question during the show, that is fine. Otherwise, we'll go to a quick break, and then we will come back and just jump right on into it.
Imagine you can smell the rich aroma of McCafe espresso beans brewing. Now imagine you can taste the chocolate, the caramel, the hazelnut, or French vanilla flavors, and the perfect swirls of thick whipped topping. If you could, you'd head to McDonald's right now for a hot or iced latte, mocha, or macchiato fix. It's decadence in a coffee cup. A small is only $2. McCafe, good is brewing. Price and participation may vary.
Does anybody want breakfast? Guys, let's go. I'm leaving for McDonald's in 5 seconds.
Why didn't you start with that?
The Breakfast Stampede Meal. It's only at McDonald's, where there's a meal for every morning.
And with buy one, get one for a dollar, you can grab everyone's favorites, like a McChicken biscuit, chicken McGriddles, sausage McMuffin, and more. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Valid for item of equal or lesser value. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Merry Christmas from Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet. Christmas Silver and U.S. Silver Eagles are in stock. Plus, they have preparedness supplies, coins and paper money, gold and silver, jewelry, and they now stock ammo as well. There's also a huge selection of great gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else in our area. Open weekdays and Saturdays through Christmas. Located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Call 263-6060. Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet.
There's no place like home for the holidays, and Selkirk Association of Realtors couldn't agree more. The holidays are a time for family, friends, and community to come together and celebrate the joy of the season. But we also understand that not everyone is fortunate enough to be home for the holidays. So whether you're gathering at Grandma's house or connecting across the world with your loved ones, Selkirk Association of Realtors wishes you and yours a Merry Christmas and a joyous holiday season.
If you came across a child struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes, their age, the way they speak? Would you recognize a 13-year-old boy who gets into fights at school?
Not because he's a bully, but because he's hungry?
Or a 2-year-old girl who cries all night?
Not because she's sick, but because she went to bed without enough to eat.
Or maybe a 9-year-old boy who hopes a friend invites him to a sleepover?
Not for fun, just so we can have dinner.
Or a 15-year-old girl who goes for walks over lunch,
so her friends won't know she doesn't have anything to eat.
I am the 1 in 7 American children who struggle with hunger. Kids you pass by every day, but never knew were hungry. I am Child Hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong.
KSPT, KBFI, North Idaho's Radio.
Welcome back to Common Law. I'm Arthur Beistein, your host of this Civics Variety Show. And today we're going to be talking about constitutional law, but first we're going to jump into a couple of questions from the listeners in Radioland. And the first question comes from Don Julio, and he is following up on the topic I discussed about these property inspections and how quite often the contract you sign with the property inspector has a specific provision that says, you know, if we really screw anything up, your damages are limited to whatever you paid us, which is usually a couple hundred dollars, maybe $300 or $400, and maybe they missed a $40,000 mistake. Again, read what they give you to sign carefully. If that's in there, don't agree to it, because they're really just saying, and if we don't do our job, well, too bad. So you're not really paying for anything, so don't do that. But the question from Don is, what about if the inspector has insurance? And you may remember that I discussed also at some point, maybe, I don't know what show, but it was this thing called general commercial liability insurance that your contractor has. And I explained that that doesn't mean that if the contractor builds you a bad house, the insurance company is going to pay to fix it. It just means that if they build you a bad house and it kills you, well, they'll pay you for getting killed, but they won't pay to fix the house. And the reason that that is the case is there's an exclusion in almost all of these contracts that specifically excludes any coverage for any liability that the insured person, be it the contractor or the inspector, assumes by means of a contract. Meaning that if you're getting sued because you entered into an agreement and you breached it, we don't cover that. So it's same with home inspectors. Their insurance policies, if they have one, most likely do not cover mistakes that they would make in that situation, which is why they have the exclusions that they have. So if you want to get a home inspection, what I would do is just go find a reputable builder and have them go through the house and pay them whatever they want for their time. They build houses, they know what they're doing. Most inspectors also have built houses. But you just, you know, why hire somebody if they're not really providing you anything? So I hope that answers Mr. Julio's question. And now we'll move on to the actual email. And the email consisted of a number of questions, but really the gist of the issue that the writer was getting at was basically this balancing of continuing to devastate our economy in an effort to control the virus. And, you know, obviously there's a balancing there that has created a whole lot of conflict amongst us about what we should do one way or the other. So first, I acknowledge that there are a lot of people out there that think maybe this virus is being overreported or whatever. And I'm willing to acknowledge that may be the case. I don't know. Well, what I do know is that if you look at the last 5 years, we have a whole lot more dead people right now than we did on average over the last 5 years. So I don't know, you know, what's overreported or what's underreported. I do know there's a whole lot more dead people than there normally is. So something's going on. And so, you know, I'm a belt and suspenders kind of guy, so let's go ahead and err on the side of caution and just assume that, yes, this is a dangerous virus and we should probably be careful with it, keep your distance, do what you need to. It's called a novel virus for a reason, because they don't know anything about it. They're starting to learn a lot, and hopefully these vaccines will work out, but for now, just err on the side of caution. Besides, if you wear a mask in your car, nobody can see you singing to the music. That's the main reason I like to wear it. But real quick, if you think the deaths are actually fabricated, well, then we don't have a lot more to talk about. I mean, that would be quite a hoax, and it seems like it would be pretty dang tough in today's information age. And along those same lines, and I can't help but comment on the last radio show just because I heard them talking about a stolen election. And again, I'm not saying that it didn't happen. I'm saying you can't prove it, so stop saying it. We say this in lawsuits all the time. I know maybe he did beat you, but we can't prove it. And if you can't prove it, then we need to stop saying it, because it just amplifies the problem, makes everybody more wound up. Everything can be proved. And if you're watching whatever talking heads you want to watch and you don't see anything that proves to you what they're saying, somebody making a statement, somebody signing an affidavit, an email, a whistleblower, something, then don't believe it. I mean, you can prove anything. And something as big as an election fraud that they're talking about, there is no way that you could pull that off. I mean, they've gone as far as to say they were fabricating ballots to match the machines. 7 million? I mean, here's the deal. If whoever did pull that off, which the prior host didn't actually identify who these people were, well, then they should be in charge because they're obviously brilliant, because that would be the most amazing thing I could think of. So anyway, the point is, if you can't prove it, then don't say it. I mean, nobody needs to hear your guess about what maybe has happened. Just keep it to yourself. All it just creates more division amongst us, and we just don't need it. So anyway, back to the question. What do we do about this economic impact of these shutdowns, for lack of a better term, or lockdowns? Well, I listen to the experts, and I don't know, it was a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, I was listening to the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank, who by all accounts is probably the foremost expert and the people who work for him on monetary policy. And what he said was, we have a lot of room to work here, people, and now is not the time to be a budget hawk. This bubble did not burst. This wasn't a bubble that burst. This is not anybody's fault. Our economy was just clicking right along at a steady pace ever since 2008, been climbing steadily at the same rate. Everything was good. This isn't like we have a bunch of bad bankers and speculators that caused this. So we just need to get through it. We need to have targeted relief focused on the people who were impacted. The businesses that shut down through no fault of their own, those are the people we need to put back on their feet. So the minute we can open this thing up again, they're rolling. You don't need to send money to the NBA teams. I mean, that first thing was, I remember that commercial, I don't remember who did it, when the Knights of the Round Table are all sitting there and they say, what shall we do? And some guy puts a huge bag of money in a trebuchet and throws it. I mean, that's what they did in the beginning. That was a huge mistake. But granted, you know, armchair quarterbacking in that situation is pretty easy to do. So what do I say? I say stay the course, wear your mask, keep your distance, wait for the vaccine. I mean, if you don't believe in the vaccine, fine. I'm not even going to go there with that. I can say that pharmaceutical companies generally don't like getting sued in mass tort litigation. So, you know, nobody's going to force them to do something that's going to expose them to basically ruining their company. But if you don't want to do it, I respect that also. I just think that, you know, we need to consider getting rid of this thing, but I don't know. Anyway, I'll leave that alone. So anyway, that I think answers that question. The other thing I would do is, and I'm pretty sure it wouldn't be legal because you can't like pick on certain people for taxes. But what I would do is stick a little extra tax on these companies that have just absolutely made a killing on the pandemic. Amazon, car insurance companies, delivery companies, telecom companies, and I'm sure there are all other kinds of companies out there that this was an absolute bonanza for. I would love to be able to tax them. I haven't really considered it too much, but I'm pretty sure you can't just pick certain people to do that to. So anyway, I hope that answers our two readers' questions. I know that the answer to the question about what do we do about the pandemic could be perceived as political, but really it's economics. Again, I am a finance major. I've studied a lot of economics and monetary and fiscal policy. And so I'm not saying throw money at everybody and let them do what they want with it. I'm saying that right now that's what we do, and that's what we think we need to do. So that, I guess, answers the question. So let's move on to constitutional law. And since I have a little time before the next break, I want to start with this mask issue. And I'm not talking about whether or not they do any good or don't do any good. When I go into a store that has a sign on the window that says, you have to wear a mask. And I go in there and I see people who aren't wearing masks. And that really upsets me. I guess makes me flat out mad. Not because I'm worried that they're being ignorant about this virus or whatever, which maybe they are, maybe they're not. What really makes me mad is that these people are doing this because they're making some sort of statement about their civil liberties, which is not really a term of art in what we do, but the idea that you can't make me wear a mask in a store, that's what bothers me. Because, you know, when you're making your statement that you don't have to wear a mask in a store, where are you walking into? You're walking into private property. And last time I checked, property rights were kind of on equal footing with whatever civil liberties are, or the right not to wear a mask. So you walk on in there and you're violating their property rights. And I'm pretty sure if I showed up on your front lawn without any clothes on, wanted to have a chat, you'd call the police on me. Well, when you walk into Walmart without a mask, it's only because Walmart isn't calling the police on you that you're not getting arrested for trespass. So if you think you're a constitutionalist and you're not wearing a mask because of your constitutional rights, well, consider what you're doing. You're trampling other people's property rights in the process of making whatever statement you're trying to make. When was the last time anybody threatened a governor for no shoes, no shirt, no service? Again, seriously. I mean, I've never seen anybody outside of Walmart screaming at the lady out front because they can't come in without their shirt on. So their place, their rules, if you don't like it, don't go in. You don't have a constitutional right to go into any store you want. You just don't. So do what you're going to do, but understand that when you're trying to prove your point, you're violating other people's rights to their private property to control what they have. Please consider that when you get into these modes. And I don't think that's political. I'm not really supposed to be political, but that's not political. It's just saying, look, you're not seeing both sides of things, which we quite often don't anymore because we get hung up in these broad terms that allow us just to group everybody together without really thinking about what we are doing. And with that, I'll take us to a break, and then we'll come back and move on to some of the more boring parts of constitutional law. Concerning, I guess we'll just start probably with the fundamental rights and that kind of stuff. I don't really think y'all want me to talk about the Commerce Clause or the, well, anyway, we'll just go to a break.
Hello, this is Nevin Neal, pastor of Bonners Ferry Baptist Church. The Word of God states in Psalm 23, verses 1 and 4, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." Please notice the simple but profound truth of verse 4 in Psalm 23. The peace of the psalmist was not found in the absence of the evils of darkness or danger or even of death, but in his confidence that the Lord was present. Someone greater than those evils was with him. Your peace today, my friend, will not be found in the absence of evil, but in the presence of the Lord. I ask you, is He present in your life? Is He your Savior? Is He your Shepherd? If not, He can be and should be. If I can assist you in any way, please contact me by texting or calling 208-267-3746.
A photograph is an image frozen in time. Your children when they were small, your vacation 10 years ago, a graduation, a birthday, an old friend you haven't seen in years. Photographs take you back to a time that is gone forever, a memory to cherish for years to come. If you don't print photographs, you need to. Start saving tomorrow's memories today. Preserve your special moments. Visit us at The Image Maker. We've been your friends in the photo business since 1978.
North Idaho's Radio and Parker Subaru are teaming up for the 4th annual Sandpoint High School New Car Raffle. Help Sandpoint High School students reach their goal with your purchase of new car raffle tickets. And on January 8th, you could be driving a new 2020 Subaru Crosstrek Premium. Last year, students raised over $58,000. Get your $5 new car raffle ticket from any Sandpoint High School student. Sponsored by Parker Subaru and North Idaho's Radio.
If you came across a child struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? By their clothes? their age, the way they speak? Would you recognize a 13-year-old boy who gets into fights at school?
Not because he's a boy, but because he's hungry?
Or a 2-year-old girl who cries all night?
Not because she's sick, but because she went to bed without enough to eat.
Or maybe a 9-year-old boy who hopes a friend invites him to a sleepover.
Not for fun, just so he can have dinner.
Or a 15-year-old girl who goes for walks over lunch,
so her friends won't know she doesn't have anything to eat.
I am the 1 in 7 American children who struggle with hunger. Kids you pass by every day, but never knew were hungry. I am Child Hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America, 200 Food Banks Strong.
97.1 FM is North Idaho's radio.
Hello, welcome back to Common Law. I'm Arthur Beislein, your host, and now we will talk about constitutional law. But first, I like to share interesting facts. I listen to these history books, United States history, various people, different, views and whatever. And you always get these interesting things you didn't know, which I don't know if I told you on the first show, but if you ever heard this phrase, damn the torpedoes, I didn't know this, but that was said by Admiral Farragut as he sailed into, I think, either Mobile or Charleston Harbor. I can't remember off the top of my head. The torpedoes are obviously mines. And he had to get out of range of these guns in order to, win. And so he apparently strapped himself to the forecastle and said, damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. But that's obviously Farragut State Park. And another interesting fact, if you're a history nerd, is if you ever heard the term grandfathered, like my rights are grandfathered in. I've been saying it forever. I never knew where it came from. Well, it's not a very happy beginning for that phrase. It grew out of a rule that the southern states passed in reaction to, African Americans being allowed to vote. So they passed a law that said, I think it was either maybe 1890, or I don't remember the election, but they passed a law that said if your grandfather couldn't have voted in the 1860 election, then you can't vote in this one. So that's where that phrase comes from. So I myself have quit using that phrase. There's other ways to say it in long legal terms, but we're not going to get into that. All right, so back to constitutional law, and I'm going to return to the last topic I had in the last show, and I'm probably going to talk about this topic every single show until somebody cares, because I just don't know why nobody cares. You would think that all you constitutionalists out there that think that the Constitution should be followed, I mean, this is one of the rare times when you can actually look at the Constitution itself and say what they're doing does not work. And again, what are they doing? The Congress, both houses, they're passing rules that change the voting requirements that are in the Constitution. They're passing rules that dilute your representatives' vote or outright prevent them from voting at all. And again, the Constitution calls out, I believe, 7 places where it requires a 2/3. I mean, most of them, that override a veto, which we'll learn about here soon, and approve a treaty. And I can't remember all the rest of them. Oh, impeach a president, obviously. But it doesn't say it anywhere else. And in my business, what's that mean? That means that you can't create a rule that changes the voting requirements. They're altering how our system of government is supposed to work with rules. And this is a nonpartisan issue. They both do it. They both like it because it allows the minority to have more power than they're supposed to have. And that is what grinds your Congress to a halt. President Trump danced around this issue. He never really quite put his finger on it, but, he's always very frustrated with, why don't they vote? How come they're not voting? How come they need 60? I mean, I actually sent him a text or a letter, an email that said, look, here's the deal. You want to do something about it? Here's what you do. You know, go in there and say you can't do that. And somebody has to say it. And if nobody ever addresses this, the political parties are just going to keep on keeping on, keeping power, not answering for their votes, and not doing their job. Because if you don't vote, you're not doing anything. And I'll leave it there. Write your congressman, write your senator, demand that they provide you an explanation as to why they think it's okay to change what the Constitution says about how to pass a law, because that's what they're doing. All right, now on to the actual document itself. First and foremost about the Constitution, there are those of you out there who think that it is the beginning and the end of an analysis by looking at that document when it comes to a particular law you're concerned with. That is just not the case. That's just plain wrong. The Constitution is not a document that's designed to provide rules for an organized society. It is a framework for the operation of a government that will provide certain laws for the operation of an organized society. The document itself says this. Article 1, Section 8, Clause 18, Congress shall have the power to make all laws which shall be necessary and proper for carrying into execution the foregoing powers and all other powers vested by the Constitution in the government of the United States or any department or officer thereof. So, yes, Congress can make laws. And so if you're one of those people that thinks that, you know, if there's not the word Securities and Exchange Commission in the Constitution, it's not legal, well, you're just wrong, okay? And I'm sorry, but you are, because you can't talk about the Constitution without talking about all the law that comes after it, because that's what the courts do. And to, you know, back up a little bit, we all understand how it works, is that you have these three branches. You have the legislative branch, you have the executive branch, and then you have the judicial branch. Now, the legislative branch and the executive branch are what we would consider to be, well, what the founding fathers considered to be the mob rule. To be real clear, the founding fathers did not believe in democracy. They thought that was probably the most absurd way to run any country. Now, when I say democracy, we use that term very loosely these days. True democracy was invented in Greece, I don't know what year, obviously a long time ago. And it really was ruled by the people, but it really wasn't, because it was just the citizens of Athens, and the majority of people are excluded. So, but that's where it started. And another interesting note, you ever heard the phrase, it's not all black and white? Well, that's how they voted in Athens, a black stone or a white stone. And so the idea it's not all black or white, that's where that comes from. So, no, we're not a democracy. We never were supposed to be one. They didn't want one. But they, you know, that was the whole battle, the mix of the will of the people versus the people writing the Constitution being not quite so sure that the people were smart enough to be running a government. That was the mix. So what did they do about the mob? Well, the mob is the legislature. They're elected officials. They are absolute slaves to their constituents. Same with the president, he's a slave electoral vote. So to offset the mob, they created the judicial branch. And what the judicial branch does is just looks at laws they passed and says whether or not they fit within the framework of our Constitution. So the point is this: you really can't talk about whether or not something is or is not constitutional unless you consider all the prior case law from the Supreme Court on the subject and how they've considered these things. And if you've not done that, then you really need to temper your opinion on some constitutionality of this, that, or the other thing in recognition of the fact that you really don't know what you're talking about. And I'm not being an elitist lawyer snob saying you got to go to law school. You can learn this stuff without going to law school. There are a number of books that take Supreme Court jurisprudence, as we call it, and break it down so it's understandable. And believe it or not, the stuff they write does make sense. But it's, you know, you start reading this stuff and you're asleep or confused before you even get into the meat of the thing. But they break these things down. They're called horn books. They got con law for dummies. So if you really want to know what you're talking about, then educate yourself. Otherwise, you're just talking about how you feel. So anyway, the point is this also. The Constitution necessarily involves, any con law analysis involves balancing. Balancing the rights that you may be invading versus what you're trying to accomplish. So what does that look like? Well, the idea is this, that there's kind of three ways you look at something that a legislative body does. If it's something that doesn't have anything to do with like a fundamental right, for example, in the state of Idaho, the right to serve liquor by the drink is not a right, it's a privilege. So any law you may pass that's related to that privilege must be at least rationally related to, you could probably outright ban it, but it must be at least rationally related to some legitimate purpose, meaning you passed a law, it had a reason, even if it's just loosely related to the reason, maybe there's a better way to do it, it's okay. Now, the next level you get to, once you start touching on fundamental rights, then you start talking about different levels of scrutiny, we call it. And you've got intermediate scrutiny, and then you've got strict scrutiny. So intermediate scrutiny are, you know, that, I'm going to use guns. I mean, why not? Fun topic. Sometimes intermediate scrutiny applies to gun laws. Sometimes strict scrutiny applies to gun laws. It's an analysis that is far too complex to get into here. But basically, the analysis when you get into intermediate scrutiny is that it's, well, let me see, where is intermediate? Well, it must be, the law must be either, well, hold on, let's just skip intermediate scrutiny. I don't like that one anymore. I can't find the standard here in front of me. Let's go on to strict scrutiny, which is way more fun. That one is, the law must be compelling. What you're trying to accomplish must be compelling, and how you're trying to accomplish it must be narrowly tailored to accomplish what you are trying to do. And when the law steps on fundamental rights, like the right to keep and bear arms, then, as I said, it can be either one, but let's just say that they've, let's do an outright handgun ban in the city of Sandpoint. Now, that definitely would be reviewed under strict scrutiny. Or let's do one that seems a little more pertinent. Let's talk about an outright ban on semi-automatic rifles. Now, I know most of you out there say that's bad, and some of you say that's good. Some of you say I'm gun rights, and some of you say I'm gun control. Well, that's all rubbish. Those terms are a lazy person's way to talk about this stuff. You just group everybody into one thing, and you're either this or you're that. It's not. You want to talk about gun control or gun rights, talk about, ask your friend, so what level of regulation are you comfortable with for firearms? Because clearly we all are comfortable with some level of regulation, because, I don't know, some of you out there probably disagree, but I think even the most ardent gun people think that suppressors probably shouldn't be in the hands of your average citizen. You might know them as silencers, which is a misnomer because a suppressed weapon, when everything else is quiet, isn't that quiet. It's just not as loud as a unsuppressed weapon. So there's really not really any reason you don't want anybody to know you're shooting your gun. I mean, unless you're shooting at the Canadian geese on your lawn, which I'm not trying to incite violence against Canadian geese, but I got to say, they don't even fly in formation anymore. And I tried to get poutine to one down at the beach this summer and he didn't want it. So I don't know if they qualify as Canadian, but anyway, that I'm teasing. But the point is, most of us think you shouldn't have a suppressor. I think all of us think nobody needs a pocket nuke. So if you agree with me, well, you're for some level of regulation. And so get over the idea of gun control or gun rights. That doesn't do anything to talk about the where you sit in the scale of what you think you ought to have happen. And at that, I'm going to leave it at that, and we'll come back after the break, and I will talk about, you know, how would I talk about an outright ban on semi-automatic rifles in response to these mass shootings.
Happy holidays from 41 South, located lakeside just south of Sandpoint's Long Bridge. Come celebrate the holiday season with amazing food, professional service, and beautiful atmosphere. Still need a little gift inspiration? How about a gift certificate for 41 South? There's no better way to impress your boss, family, and friends than to invite them to dine at the most elegant and notable restaurant near Sandpoint. Open Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. Call 265-2000 now for a reservation. 41 South, the icing on the lake.
The Northwest is full of hard workers, early risers, innovators, and extra milers. You don't back down when hardships come your way. You open your doors and get to work. That's why P1FCU Member Business Services is here to support you. We're proud to be your credit union. You keep life moving and communities united. Stronger together, we are P1FCU, a Pacific Northwest original since 1938.
Imagine you can smell the rich aroma of McCafe espresso beans brewing. Now imagine you can taste the chocolate, the caramel, the hazelnut, or French vanilla flavors, and the perfect swirls of thick whipped topping. If you could, you'd head to McDonald's right now for a hot or iced latte, mocha, or macchiato fix. It's decadence in a coffee cup. A small is only $2. McCafe, good is brewing. Price and participation may vary.
Does anybody want breakfast? Guys, let's go. I'm leaving for McDonald's in 5 seconds.
Why didn't you start with that?
The Breakfast Stampede Meal. It's only at McDonald's, where there's a meal for every morning.
And with buy one, get one for a dollar, you can grab everyone's favorites, like a McChicken biscuit, chicken McGriddles, sausage McMuffin, and more. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Valid for item of equal or lesser value. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Merry Christmas from Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet. Christmas silver and U.S. silver eagles are in stock. Plus, they have preparedness supplies, coins and paper money, gold and silver, jewelry, and they now stock ammo as well. There's also a huge selection of great gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else in our area. Open weekdays and Saturdays through Christmas. Located on Triangle Drive, just south of the Kootenai Cutoff Road in Ponderay. Call 263-6060. Grünberg Schloss Collector's Cabinet.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen.
For late nights writing English papers.
For your teen's music taste.
For dinners, where they talk more on their phone than with you.
For the first time, they call you mom.
You're never completely ready to adopt a teen, and you can't imagine the reward.
To learn more about adopting a teen, visit AdoptUSKids.org.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Listen live anytime, anywhere with our new website, NorthIdahoRadio.com.
Welcome back to Common Law. We've been talking about various constitutional things. We left off with the always not too touchy subject of gun laws. So I thought we'd come back to that. Now, what we were going to talk about was, I mentioned that when you look at laws that legislative bodies pass that touch on fundamental rights, like the right to keep and bear arms, well, then there's a level of scrutiny called strict scrutiny, where you must have a compelling reason for the law and the ends must be narrowly tailored to achieve the result. So the idea would be that we're going to ban I'm not going to call them assault rifles, because what if you're using them for defense? Let's just call them semi-automatic rifles, because the idea is that be able to fire a lot of rounds really quick. It doesn't matter if it's a semi-automatic Ruger 22 or if it's a semi-automatic AR-15. Either way, the damage is going to happen. So banning semi-automatic rifles to prevent mass shootings. All right, are the ends compelling? I think we can all agree that yes, that's a pretty good goal. Let's stop the mass shootings. Now let's talk about whether the means are narrowly tailored. Now, first you got to talk about, well, what rights are being affected here? Well, it's not just the rights of basically the people who seem to have some mental health issues that have these guns. It is every other law-abiding citizen in the country who has these weapons also. So, in essence, you're going to deprive a large number of people of a I don't know, maybe it's not a constitutional right to have a semi-automatic rifle, but I'm going to think it probably is, and you're going to deprive them of it to stop a few people from doing this. All right. Well, what kind of people generally do this? Well, people with severe mental health issues. I don't know that, you know, the one guy in Vegas, who knows, killed himself before we knew, but I just generally got to think you got to screw loose if you're going to do something like this. So is it narrowly tailored to take all of these weapons from everybody who's not doing anything wrong? Well, I don't think so. So what really is the issue? Is it mental health? Yeah, it's mental health. So is there other things we can do besides that to try to address that issue? Well, I would sure think that there is. And I would think that there's also other things we can do, like make the laws for people who negligently store firearms that fall into the hands of children or people who are mentally unstable, make that a real big, big crime. I mean, this guy who shot up Sandy Hook, how did he get a hold of that gun? How did that happen? I mean, and if it happened, that's somebody's fault. I mean, there's just no way there's not. Put a lock on it, put it in a safe, do something with it. He's in your, I mean, I don't know how that all went down, but that I think is a better way to handle it. So that is how you discuss laws that you think violate your rights. And I didn't really say it in the beginning, I'll say it now. Your constitutional rights are not inviolate, okay? They are alienable, absolutely alienable. Otherwise, there wouldn't be anybody in prison now, would there? So yes, they can take them from you and with due process of law. So again, that's why it's always a balancing, is they can infringe on them if they have a compelling reason to do so. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater. Everybody thinks that's a fine rule that restricts your First Amendment rights. You know, you can't carry weapons into schools. I think most people think that that's probably an okay rule. I mean, anymore, they're probably wondering if it needs to go the other way. Adding guns to me has never been a good idea to prevent gun violence in schools anyway. So that's what I'm trying to convey. I guess what I'm really trying to convey is everybody needs to step back right now. I mean, you're all us or them. There's no us or them. I mean, it's us. We got to start talking about the issues that matter. I mean, you may think somebody's a liberal. I have people who probably think I'm a liberal. You want to talk to me about the military, you wouldn't think so. And so it's always a matter of degree. And the same goes, for example, like regulation. I mean, that's the big one about the economy. Oh, the Democrats want to over-regulate and the Republicans, regulation's bad. No, regulation's not bad. Just like we agree most people shouldn't have a silencer or a suppressor, we agree in some form of regulation of business. And why do we agree to that? Well, let me give you an example. I don't know if most of you probably don't know this, but I don't know, before the turn of the century, maybe a little after, if you killed somebody negligently, well, you were off the hook, meaning nobody could sue you. Their wife couldn't sue you. They obviously couldn't sue you because you were dead. So that all changed when they trained. There's a hint to where we're going with this. That all changed when they passed these thing called wrongful death statutes. Now, why did they pass those? Well, okay, the railroads, back in the day, they had sleeper cars. They still do. Well, before the wrongful death statutes, all the sleeper bunks were had the head of the bed towards the front of the train. And as you probably can guess, trains don't often derail at high speed in reverse. So what's that mean? When the train derails, a guy with a broken neck can't file a lawsuit, but a guy with a broken leg can. That's what they do. As a matter of fact, the vast majority of what we consider personal injury law comes from the railroads because of that kind of thing. And another example I like to use is my favorite story that all the people that think the lawyers are just wrong and rotten is the McDonald's hot coffee case. Who needs $13 million for spilling hot coffee in their lap? I mean, it's hot coffee. You're in a drive-thru. Duh. Okay, well, what they don't tell you is the rest of the story. One, it had happened a number of times before to other people. But the real kicker, similar to the Ford Pinto case. If you all saw that movie with Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio and Gene Hackman, that was based on the Ford Pinto case. Here's why the coffee was so hot. The coffee was about 20 degrees hotter than coffee is supposed to be served at. And the difference in that 20 degrees means this poor lady's skin would not have come off with her pants. So why was the coffee so hot? Because McDonald's figured out that if you're on a break, if it's too hot, you can't get a refill. You don't have time to drink it. It's too hot. And they elicited that testimony, and the jury gave the lady one day of profit on McDonald's coffee, $13 million. To me, that was way too light. And just for a little back on the Ford Pinto thing, if you've never seen the movie or are unfamiliar with the case, it was the first huge, like a $213 million verdict, which seems like pennies by what's going on today. But what happened was they got a hold of this lady, got rear-ended in a Pinto, and it blew up, and she was on fire. You could hear her screaming in there, and, you know, terrible. Well, when they sued Ford, they got the actuarial scientist from Ford on the stand, and he said, well, we calculated the difference between the cost of a recall and the likely probability of the number of payouts we'd have to make for lawsuits. And the difference was $213 million. So yes, some regulation of business is absolutely necessary. People will do anything for money. We all know that. They always have. It's been the number one driver of just about every problem we can think of, whether you guise it under religion or whatever else, but money motivates people to do bad things. Does that mean we need to overregulate the heck out of everything? No, but it's a balance. So don't say you're against regulation, and don't say you want more regulation. Just say we need to find a balance of regulation that works, that allows business to not be strangled by overregulation, but keeps them from doing things like the railroad and McDonald's. And this stuff goes on all the time. So, anywho, that's the, I guess that's what I got on constitutional law. I mean, it's a whole year of 3 hours a week of lectures. So as you can imagine, there's a whole lot more boring stuff we can talk about. And I think we will talk about some of it at some point. I mean, the problem is talking about it with the topics, I'll have to think of other things to talk about it, because generally it comes down to politics when I can try to explain to people why you don't need to worry about this, that, or the other thing, because there's 100 ways to get something done without the Supreme Court or without the president or without the Congress. And there's ways to make states do things that the Supreme Court says you can't without having to make them do it. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. We want your drinking age to be 21, and you want your highways to be better than they are. So maybe we can get together on this one. It's called the power of the purse. So anyway, I think that about wraps it up. I hope I haven't offended anybody, because I'm just really just talking about what the thing says, and I'm hoping that you all can learn to talk to each other about it without using words like the last host did, like scumbag and elitist and redneck and blah, blah, blah. You know, just talk to each other. You'd be amazed how much you have in common with people if you just sit down and get over that you think maybe they're this, that, or the other thing, and just listen to what they have to say. And with that, I think I'll wrap it up. And you all have a happy holidays. Be safe out there. And we will catch you in the new year. And we can all tell 2020 goodbye, au revoir. And I can't swear on the radio, so I will stop right there. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.